You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Hurling Show. We're going to be joined in a little while by Antrim's Neil McManus to talk about, well, all areas, I suppose, concerning Antrim Hurling. But for the moment, we're marvelling at the fact that we're into the closing 3 weeks of the Championship. And to discuss the semi-finals coming up this weekend, we have James Ryle from Kilkenny, who rightly called the four semi-finalists. James, how are you?
Very good, Diarmaid.
No doubt, we'll hear more about that. And Paddy Maher as well. Paddy, good to have you.
Thank you, Diarmaid.
How is it without Tipperary's involvement in the semi-final stage? Is it weird at this stage, or are you just, yeah, you've kind of digested your state, the state of affairs in Tipperary at the moment, and kind of looking towards next year?
Yeah, look, obviously it's disappointing from Tipperary point of view, but to be fair, they probably didn't deserve to be there anyway. It was a poor championship, and unfortunately in Tipperary we're getting used now not making Croke Park for the last 2 or 3 years, so yeah, small bit worrying, but hopefully we can turn it around. But no, I think the best teams are left in the Championship now somehow.
Yeah, it seems like it. James, you had him picked. I guess, yeah, no real surprise at the same time. Kilkenny, how are you feeling about the Clare game? I don't know, but the Wexford game have given you a little bit of hope, actually, the Clare Wexford game, because we kind of saw a very different side of Clare.
Yeah, I think Kilkenny needed a break. They needed a 4 week break. I suppose we're looking forward to this semi-final nearly more in hope than, you know, I suppose expecting a performance. We've probably underperformed a little bit so far, and I think the 4 weeks are going to be important to Kilkenny to get training and get back to basics. And
so you take the 4 weeks of kind of working in-house as opposed to maybe a game in the middle where you get to learn a little bit more. You kind of felt this is what you needed.
Without a doubt, and I feel the way the Championship is even set up this year, that there's no time for training, there's no time for fringe panellists to, it's very hard to get it right. And I suppose if you take Waterford probably went down that wrong road where it went wrong and there was no time to bring it back or to get lads playing. So there's probably a couple of guys in Kilkenny hadn't seen much play time. And then if you go back in that 4 week break, say win a Leinster final, have a few beers, maybe 1 or 2 days, get back into it mid that week. So you've probably 2.5 weeks, maybe go away for a weekend.
Yeah.
That 2.5 weeks then of serious training. And that's where I think people find form. Mm. And even personally, I loved that few weeks. There was a time when you'd be training, you'd be coming, you'd be getting there. And some lads improve a lot in those few weeks. Other lads go the other way. But it's a level playing field. And I think, you know, we'd write off the Championship nearly at the Leinster final stage and say, now it's into an All-Ireland series. And really what's gone before, although not forgotten, it really is forgotten in some ways, that you just focus on those weeks. And if you're playing well in training, then...
Well, there's two things there. Is how much, when it comes to a semi-final and a final, does pedigree come in versus form? Like, everybody's talked to the high heavens about Brian Cody's insistence on form is form, but then you always feel like, well, look at the class is also class. Like, how much is it really at this stage form, you know, just down to form?
Yeah, well, I think nearly 100% down to form, you know, and obviously class and that is, you know, is massively important, but I think it's down to form. And, you know, you hear questions asked when people say, why isn't this lad starting and why isn't Cody playing this lad? And you'll hear a team being named and lads will say, that's hardly the team. Why is this lad being left off? But, you know, I've always said it.
They don't know.
Well, the person being left off is obviously not hurling well enough, and that's the truth behind it. There's no big secret, there's no big science behind it. It's, you know, the best 15 within reason. If you're coming down to a flick of a coin between one or two lads, then maybe pedigree might come into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you're performing in a training session, marking the best that you have in there, whether it be a forward or a back, and you're performing well, it doesn't matter. You can bring that to the, you know, and you'll see that with teams even. I've often said it that if you go back to kind of a club team and you have a really good forward playing maybe junior hurling, and I'd always say if he's well able to put the ball over the bar at junior hurling, if you put him up into senior hurling, he'd still be able to put the ball over the bar. It's the same hurl, the same ball, the same goalposts.
Not the same time though, like not the same intensity, is it?
Well, look at it this way. If you're a guy playing senior hurling and you're not able to score, if you go back down to junior, you mightn't score either because, do you know, it's just mightn't have the ability, like, you know, if you can't score, it doesn't matter what level, but if you can, and I know timing and everything comes into it, but if you're on a panel of 32 or 4 or 6 players in a county, you know, there is something about you. There has to be something about you. And I think if you're performing well then at a training session in those few weeks. So, and a few people needs, they need the game, I think. And the way the championship is set up, it was game after game after game. And I think in Kilkenny, we didn't have the greatest Leinster championship. We ended up in the top two, which you wanted to end the provincial. We ended up winning the Leinster final. And they just needed that break. And I think we've dealt well with the break in the past. And I think we kind of know what's happening. It's a clear cut run, as I said. There'll be 2.5 weeks of serious training there, and then ease down for this week and pick a team and go play.
How is the run in, Paddy, to the semi final? Like, how hard is it to not be in some way focused on the young fella and the dream and the All-Ireland final, and you're so close, and you're kind of, you know, you just, yeah, the ease with which you might ramble ahead. And lose yourself a little bit, or is it just, yeah, straightforward focus on the semi-final? Like, did that come in for you?
Yeah, for us, personally, I always was never thinking, you know, if you get an Ireland semi-final, you're going up, you're really thinking about that game. And more than likely not, like you said, you have 4 best teams left in the championship now, and you're always more than likely going to be playing a top team in a semi-final, so you could never look too far behind past it.
Yeah.
And, I never went up playing an Ireland semi-final thinking, oh, you know, the final in, you know, 2 weeks' time and we're nearly there, that kind of thing. It's, you're kind of really focused on the task that's ahead of you. Like, and, you know, if I go back over semi-finals we played over the years, you were playing a Cork team, you were playing, you know, Kilkenny over the years, you know. You can't be skipping ahead thinking about an All-Ireland final, because you'll get dusted in a semi-final, yeah. You know. So, I never really thought too far ahead of it, really, to be honest with you. And you're already thinking of the task in hand, and like, obviously you're looking at Clare going in after losing the Munster final, quarter final, so they're obviously just going every 2 weeks, they're just thinking of the next game, and like Kilkenny are probably waiting for this game nearly a month, so like they're not going to be thinking of an All-Ireland final either. Like, you know, it is I don't think players go in like that,
yeah,
with that mentality.
Would you ever see in the Tipperary of your team in Tipperary in the years you play, who would come to the fore at this time of year? Like, who would you see would be kind of dancing more than worried? Like, who'd be flourishing more coming towards semi-finals and finals?
Well, I think a lot of players would have that excitement and buzz. Like, you know, even any year we went through the front door, as you call it, would say winning a Munster championship. You know, you have a lot of momentum on your back, don't you? Like, and you're going in with a lot of confidence and excitement. And as James was talking about there, like, you might go away to Carton House or somewhere like that. That's where you used to go a week or 10 days before an All-Ireland semi-final, and you're getting the buzz, and, you know, you're looking forward to getting back into Croke Park. You know, so that's building there for likes of Kenny, like, and they're going to be, you know, they had a good run in 4 weeks, probably able to iron out a few issues they probably had, and rectify things, and lads are able to do play, you know, show form and training and things like that. So there'd be a massive buzz there. And like Clare then, on the other hand, then have, you know, momentum too, is if you want to call it, because the quarter final was nearly gone for them and they got it back. So, you know, it's fascinating, you know, heading into this weekend, looking at the Kilkenny and Clare game. And I'd say in different ways both sets of players are going to be mad for the occasion.
Yeah they're ideally placed in their own right. Was there anybody, James, you noticed who flourished coming into semi-finals and finals?
I don't know, it's hard to, you know, I know for myself personally I loved that time of year, and it was the one act, that weekend away was always a weekend I seemed to play well myself, and I don't know what it was, but I don't know, was it just maybe being right or being with lads and maybe hydrating right, or maybe eating right, or
they finally got you away from the kitchen table at home, and some they could control what you were eating.
Yeah, I always seemed to, that weekend for me was always one that where if I wasn't there or thereabouts, and I wanted to get, I always brought myself back into the frame, I think, on that weekend. But everyone is different, and you know, some people, if they're performing well, you know, every day they go out, the person on the fringe, will say, who maybe isn't playing, there's less pressure on them, and they're putting their hands up more. Some of the people who are probably maybe not playing as well or didn't have a great Munster final or Leinster final or wherever the game was, I'd say there's more pressure on those guys in training, because they know they might have got the curly finger the last time. They know there's a little bit of pressure on them. They're not guaranteed their starting spot.
Yeah.
And that can play more on them and the bit of pressure, you know, sets in, and that's when performance dips. But the happy-go-lucky guy who just turns up and great to get on a bus on a weekend away, and, you know, God, free dinner, and those kind of guys, they, you know, they hop around the place and they can start performing then.
Would you always do 15 on 15, first team versus second team at this stage, or would they be would they be mixed games?
Yeah, so we kind of always, we say the week before a championship game, we would have always played a, I don't know what you want to call it, an A versus B, or sometimes then we're getting offended, so it's called probables versus possibles, and, you know, but
I didn't think they were that PC in tip.
Yeah, but they used to be happening the weekend before, or we'll say a week out from a game, so they used to always have a bit of a cut and trust about from them games, because obviously the lads that are probably going to be playing want to hold on to the place and the team, and then the lads are trying to break onto the team or break onto 26. You know, some lads might be even talking the following weekend and they want to get onto the 26, so there was always a fair bit of cut and trust in them games from my experience. And but like, even going back to the likes of Brian Cody, like, he's probably one of few managers that actually probably does play players on training form. Like, if you see over the years, like, you know, I would even see a tip over the years that some lads mightn't be performing as well in training, but it goes back to the pedigree and what they've done, and the manager's trust in
them.
Trust probably in what they've done before would keep them on the team. But like, the Brian Cody there seems to have it ironed out over the years that if you do it in training, you'll get your place in the team, and, you know, that's probably, that keeps a lot of healthy competition within the team too, because even if you're not playing, if you go well, if you know you're going to Nolan Park or wherever training, and you perform two or three nights, there's a chance I might get to start the next day, even I might even play in the Leinster final, you know. So I think he's one of the few managers that probably has that, you know, that mentality there for the last number of years, that if you're showing it in training, you know, there's a chance I'll get my opportunity. Like,
I see both sides of it, because I remember in 2004, the only time when I was playing that we got to the All-Ireland semi-final straight through, and we had that time off, and we played Waterford in the practice match. It was Mark and Tony Brown at wing forward, and he was wing back, and he scored 7 points from play, and he was fucking on fire. Like, I just couldn't put a foot wrong, and we had this strategy that we'd played against you where we were switching wing forwards, and I was young and sort of boundless energy, and then Paul Codd was there, was wing forward who I was fighting with for a place on the team, who certainly, he wasn't nearly as young and as mobile. But John Connor, and I, maybe Brian Cody would have played me on that, but John Connor didn't. And even looking back, like, I don't think he was wrong either, like, because Paul Codd had the pedigree, he had done it, and he had played in it, and he had been at the top level. And even though the form was there, like, I kind of felt he was right at the time, you know.
Yeah, but it creates a panel as well. So if you play the young guy who's performing and training, and let's say the pedigree goes down into the subs, you know, you didn't look at a sub sheet and you say, God, can you have some forward or some substitutes at the weekend to bring on? So instead of having the young guy in the subs to come on and playing the pedigree, often leaving the pedigree off and starting the young gun. And, you know, we've often created panels by doing that, we'll say, where the team has changed so much. Guys have experience of playing, and before you know it, then there's a 20 after interchange, and now it looks like you have 15 and 5 subs. Whereas if you stick to that 15 or 16, there's 2 or 3 untried. So I think Cody has done that a lot, where a guy into a big game, first 20, 25, 30 minutes, let him run around and, you know, break up a few things, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, a Walter Welch or a Patrick Welch coming on as a sub there with 20 minutes to go with all the pedigree and experience in the world. And, you know, it works both ways.
I suppose it creates a bit of, like, 20 to 30 or 25 even to 30. It's like, well, I don't care how old I am and I don't care what my pedigree is. It doesn't matter. If I play, like, it gives hope to everybody in the 30 to say, well, look at it. If you just based on form, if I do it, I'll be playing. And if I don't, it's not any story about whether I've experience or what I did 5 years ago. It's like, well, everybody has a chance if that's the meritocracy of it, if that's the lay of it, it's like everybody's a chance at every training session. So I imagine it lifts everything kind of all the time, as opposed to, like, you get this little small window and it lifts and it falls back down. Like,
it does, yeah, and it gives hope to players as well. And I've seen training sessions where a guy has been playing cornerback or wingback and it mightn't be going well, and halfway through the session he'd just switch a guy and take off that bib and swap a bib, and you'd go from the A team down to the B team in the middle of a training, not even a half time or not, you know, just swipe him out, like. And that guy that's going back down to the B team, he knows why he's going down there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The guy who's on the other side coming up, and that's, you know, it's there's so much, you know, it's cutthroat, granted, you know, but it is a cutthroat business.
High pressure, yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of the Tipperary game with Wexford and Clare last week when we played you a couple of years ago in Croke Park, and we had 6 points. I think we went 6 points ahead of you as well, and you got this little bit of excitement thinking, geez, we're going to go to an Ireland, like, I'm going to beat Tipperary. And I remember seeing Nick English and a few more up in the media section. Sir Ginny, there wasn't a bother on him even, you know, at half time, and 5 or 6 points down, they just knew that this is a 70 minute game, and we missed that. But I felt with Clare, I never really felt for some reason that we were going to beat them. I don't know where it leaves them, but there were certainly a few questions asked of them by Wexford, and some of the things we'll say, I think maybe if Kilkenny can wrap up Tony Kelly in a way that maybe they apply someone like, we'll say, Shane Reck did with Wexford, that at least nullifies a lot of what he creates. I don't know, what were you thinking looking at the Clare game in terms of how they're fixed for a semi-final?
Yeah, they obviously probably didn't perform, you know, as good as they can, or probably at near they did in the Munster final, but it's a great sign of a team though, isn't it, that to pull it out the way they did. You know, to be honest with you, I was looking at it as well, and I thought they were dead and buried. And you know, to pull it back, and like as you were saying there, Shane Reck probably was getting close to man of the match there for a lot of it, like, and then Tony Kelly came up with a couple of important scores finishing up, and that's just, like, I think going out, you know, you kind of have to man mark Tony Kelly, like, to be fair.
Yeah,
you can't give him the run of the pitch, like, you know. And
who do you see ideally placed to do it? Who in Kilkenny is going to take Tony Kelly? Is it
young Mikey Butler seems to be a good man marker. Now, I know he's still fairly inexperienced as regards senior in the county, but he looks to have a bit about him. But I don't think they'd put the likes of Hugh Lawler, they'd take him out of the square, like, you know, he's too important to... Well,
this is the thing then, is where would you, if you're playing against Clare tomorrow, where would you like to see Tony Kelly playing? Where would you most like to see him?
Well, furthest away from goal, I'd say the better, but he probably run in and start full forward or corner forward and given a license to do what he wants. But look, people put the argument in then that, you know, are you going to go away from your own game plan or style of play to nullify one man? I think you have to man mark the likes of Tony Kelly, because we've seen this year and the last number of years that he can rack up 15, 16, 17 scores in a game, like, you know. And, you know, he contributes most of the Clare scores to the scoreboard, like. So I think you have to nullify him, you know. And I think Kilkenny will do that, and I think obviously Cody's so experienced, he won't be giving Tony Kelly the run at the Croke Park on Saturday, so he'd have to be nullified. But, and then again, you know, where do Clare scores come from then, predominantly after that then, you know? So it's going to be intriguing, like. And you know, to see Kilkenny, I've seen Cody at the Munster final, the day after the Leinster final, he was below probably in third list the last day as well, so he would have had a good look at Clare, so you'd imagine they'd have their matchups right.
Do you think it was a little bit inevitable they'd have a bit of a fall against Wexford, and then, like, they're going to start kind of ramping it up semi-final, final? Is that the...
Yeah, like, it was going to be very hard to back up what they'd done in the Munster final, and, you know, the energy they put into it. I know it was a 2 week gap in that, but mentally the energy they put into it, you know, the performance was outstanding, and they had a great Munster Championship. Every single game they played well, so it's going to be hard to keep that momentum going. So maybe it's not the worst thing to get through a quarter-final stuttering for them. They can bring it back up and build it back up now for a semi-final. They haven't been in Croke Park since 2013, have they? I'm not 100% sure on that, but you know,
I'm not sure either.
Yeah, I don't think they have. So, you know, they're going to be buzzing coming up, and as I said, they're going to have probably eyes on getting back to a final now at this stage, and maybe another crack at Limerick. But you know, they're going to have all to do to beat Kilkenny though, because, you know, with Cody there, a lot of experience. And Kilkenny are already probably mad to get back to a final two after missing out the last few years. So, you know, winning three Leinsters, they did three Leinsters in a row now. They need to probably push on to the next level, which is get back to the All-Ireland final. So there's a lot at stake. And as I said, I think it's a very intriguing match now on Saturday between the two of them.
Where would you like to see Tony Kelly as a Kilkenny man?
Yeah, it's a funny, I know what Parik was saying. If you take, say, all the great forwards, which Tony Kelly is, and but if we heard in the morning they were playing Galway and Conor Whelan was midfield, you'd be delighted. Do you know, Shamie Callan midfield, if all those inside forwards, but I'd actually like to see Tony Kelly starting corner forward or full forward, because I think that's where we'd, I think it was very hard to man mark him at midfield, yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely mark him, 100% man mark him. There's no, I can't see any other way around it. And I think we'll have a position, there'll be a decision made on him whether he starts 13, 14, the whole, every single position, you know, bar if he starts on the half back line, we might leave him off. But, you know, we'll man mark him wherever he is. And
would Mikey Butler be a man for out the field if he's out the field? Or yeah, would he have to pass that off?
Well, against Galway, I think it was Mannion was playing out the field, and he ran straight out the middle of the field after him, yeah, and went around out there after him. And I think you kind of have to do it. You kind of crowd it out a bit and hoped in that their centre-back sits back a bit. But, you know, the funny thing is with Tony Kelly, and I said this with the Limerick game, that if, you know, the little bit of small experience I have from being a selector or teams and manager or something, you'd always look at a game and you'd say, if come half five on Sunday evening, or in Kilkenny's case, if come, I don't know, 7 o'clock on Saturday evening, if we're bet, what will have happened for us to be bet? And, you know, if you take Limerick the last day, if they were to sit down, the Tony Kelly's sideline cut was the winning point instead of the drawn point, I think they'd have sat back and looking at it and said, wasn't that the most obvious thing that could have happened? Tony Kelly would have destroyed us. And I won't call it naivety, but there's no way we'll go out there and just say, ah, look, wherever he is, one of our lads will pick him up and he'll be grand. We'll man mark him, we'll target him fairly, and we'll do our best to try and keep him down from scoring. If you keep him from scoring, do you know, you'll go a long way to... And there is, look, there's...
Yeah, is it opening the door? Like, well, is that what happens? Is he? You're.
I think potentially Clare have the best forwards left in the championship.
Who?
I think so.
Head of Limerick.
Well, quite possibly, yeah. Now, I know Keane Lynch has to come back into it, but I think the Clare forwards are, they're serious.
Shane O'Donnell coming back and Peter Duggan are after bringing in a whole new dimension to Clare's forward line, I think, because obviously all eyes are on Tony Kelly, and more than likely will be man-marked, or he'd be in a lot of people's eyes, would say, to look out for as an opposition team. But Duggan brings something different inside in the square, doesn't he? He's that out ball for them. He'll hold it up in there. He'll fight for it. He'll lay it off. Shane O'Donnell then is after transforming again, going out wing forward. He's having a fantastic year. So I think the limelight was taken off Tony Kelly a bit as regards. There's other options there now for people to look out for in the Clare forward line. But at the end of the day, I still think, like, I can't understand, you know, a few days this year in the championship, Tony Kelly wasn't man-marked by opposition teams, I don't think, because I've seen a lot of them live.
Yeah.
And I can't understand it as an opposition team. You have to follow him. Yeah. Like, he's contributing so much on the scoreboard that I just think he has to be followed. Like, and we done it back in 2019, blowing Ennis in the round robin. We put Brendan Maher was following him no matter where he went in the pitch. If he was corner forward, if he went back up corner back in his own team, Brendan was following him no matter what. And we all knew that was Brendan's job. Nothing else was expected of him, so we couldn't be asking him to do other jobs on the pitch.
How hard is that for him as a hurler?
Because you want
to play, like, don't you?
Yeah, but he revelled in it. Like, obviously, he's a good player himself, but he knew his job. His job was to stop him from getting the ball in his hand, and that was his job for the day. And we knew that was his job, so we couldn't be looking for him to do other jobs on the pitch. He was looking after Tony Kelly, and he done it down to a tee that day. And, like, I think if you're telling the likes of a Mikey Butler or, you know, Paddy Deegan or whoever, look, your job today is to stop don't let the ball into Tony Kelly's hand, and that's your job, and you're doing it for the team. Like, it's fairly straightforward for a player then, isn't it? Like,
what was the effect when you played Clare in that game where that's Brendan Maher, and Brendan has his own role normally, and now he has this other role where he has a very particular job and that's all he has to do? How did that affect your shape in how you played the way you normally would have played?
Well, it didn't really affect us that much, because, like, hurling now, there's no real shape to, like, Clare are going to, we say, if you're playing Clare, Tony Kelly's going to go and roam anyway.
Yeah.
So there's no shape as regards their forward line as such. So, like, as a back, you have to mark your man. So no matter where they go, you're going to have to mark him in general play. And it didn't really affect us. We knew what his job was, and we knew the rest of our roles then. Obviously, probably the centre-back, we'll have to probably mind the house a bit more. But other than that, lads knew their role. Like, and I think similar to Kenny, might be do that on Saturday as well, with, you know, Richard Reid will probably hold the fort in, like, he's been doing since he came to the team, and everyone else will be given their job. And, you know, if Tony Kelly moving around creates space, I think Richard Reid will be there to just sit back and cover it off.
How do you see that if Tony Kelly was a starting corner forward and then just drift out to midfield and bring Mikey Butler out, and then for the space that creates inside? I mean, I don't know who inside with Duggan. I don't know what, maybe like if a Shane O'Donnell went in, or you know, if somebody went in to try and exploit that space of two. Do you see Kenny dropping somebody back to allow Richie Reid to filter back into that, kind of cover up that hole a little bit more? Or
we do, but Hugh Lawler is very pacey, and I think if Hugh Lawler is left full back on his own, I'd back him to, you know, win any race over 20 or 30 yards out to the side. But you know, you're backing your team that time that these players aren't giving in this kind of a ball, you know. So you've often seen where a guy will say, God, this lad had a brilliant second half, he hurled him up a stick, but he didn't really hurl him up a stick, it's just no ball came in. And you're trying to limit that ball coming in. So I think Kilkenny will, you know, the four teams left in the championship, I think, are very traditional style within reason. There's no big bonkers tactics. You know, I know Tony Kelly will run free, but you know, just even to the Limerick, if you look at Limerick beating Clare in the Munster final, you know, Clare stood up to him nearly kind of 15 on 15 within reason. Yourselves, Tipperary, when you went toe-to-toe for 60-odd minutes and even the year previous, that's the best way, I think, to get at the likes of the Limerick. And I think Galway will do the same. Kilkenny play that. There's not going to be any massive, I suppose, I don't want to say there's no tactics. And of course, everyone pulls back and covers the man and, you know, covers space. There's nothing crazy going to happen in the teams that are left.
Cork drew it out of you, I think, the second year, where they were playing the ball out from the kind of back line, and then you started kind of almost inviting them into it, and then there was a hard press. And Limerick they probably played the hardest press in the game. I imagine Kilkenny, like, I don't know, it's not necessarily a feature of your play, but it definitely will be demanded of them against Clare, because you give them that kind of space, they can play, like.
Yeah, you give anyone the space, I suppose, and they can play. And I think we're going to see two very close games. Now, you know, people might say it differently. And
I wonder about Galway, yeah. It'd be interesting. Yeah.
Look, the form is in Munster. There's no point in saying it's not. But, you know, when you narrow it down and you match it up, and, you know, I'd be matching up the likes of Kilkenny players with some of the Clare players, and I just think, yeah, I think they have a very strong forward line. But I think Kilkenny's defence is one of the strongest defences as well. So it's very hard to
say. Who do you see in the matchup? So Lawler is going to be fine on Duggan. There's no real concern there. Inside, if the full back line holds shape, Mikey Butler. Will Padraig Walsh start? I mean, you're not training, so you don't know what the form is like, but
I meant to ring Brian before I come in, but look, if he's playing well enough, and you know, that's not being dismissive of the question, but if he's playing well enough, he'll start. And if he's not, he won't. And you know, he's definitely not being left on the line because he's been punished for some reason. He's obviously not in the greatest vein of form. But going back to that 4 weeks, that's where, if he's motoring these few weeks in there, and like this last weekend just gone, we'll say any trainings over that weekend will be big for picking the team this weekend coming.
Midfield. David Fitzgerald, does he need a particular player? I don't know. Conor Fogarty, Adrian Mullen. Like, you want Mullen to be more free to play? Would you like to see him free to play his own game, and Fitzgerald to be kind of marshed a little bit more? Or was the Limerick performance maybe? He had a great game, but he wasn't as good the last day.
Yeah, he's been overall though. He's been brilliant this year. Dave Fitzgerald has been picking off 4 or 5 pints a game there. So he will need a bit looking after, but to be interesting. But I think the middle of the pitch anyway is going to be fairly
congested
the way both teams kind of play, as you were saying, James, to kind of come back the field a bit and crowd out the middle. So it's going to be fairly hectic in the middle third there on Saturday. So but I think Kilkenny have a lot of, I suppose, both players kind of match up, both sets of players match up fairly well, like Hugh Lawler and Duggan. That could be a great battle, you know.
Yeah.
Likewise, Conor Cleary maybe on TJ Reid or something like that. There's going to be fascinating battles over the pitch, and I think the Kilkenny and Clare game is going to be very tight and close. It's going to be hard to call a winner compared to, I think Limerick were going to have way too much for Galway and myself on Sunday then.
Yeah. Owen Cody, like, if there is a Kilkenny hurler is going to get special mention in the, or special attention in the forwards as well. Rory Hayes, I don't know whether he's going to feature or not. I don't think it was an injury that he was pulled off for the last day. Like, I think it was just the furore around what had happened in the suspension. Paul Flanagan's been outstanding cornerback, so maybe he's going to detail him, I'd imagine.
Yeah, 7 or 8 minutes though. It's shocking quick to pull a lad off, no matter, you know.
I love that about Lohan at the same time, because he was like, well, your man just turned around and ran straight across his own goal. He had missed the ball just before that. And he said, right, well, look at his head, isn't it? Maybe give him a chance to figure it out, but...
Switch corners, maybe, or yeah.
Big call. He's such a big player for them.
Big call.
He's one of the best cornerbacks in the country, and then he just whips him off, like, so...
But he wouldn't like to see... He knows that commentary is there, and he's conceded 14 points in two games. I can't imagine Lohan... I'd say Lohan now looking at Frank beside him for years, like, and Frank is leaving a point or two go every game, and then he sees this fella who has an all-star or player of the year, and people are talking about him as in these levels, and then he's shipping that kind of score. Like, I can't imagine Lohan is too fond of that either. Like,
yeah, no, I was at the Munster final, and Shamey Flanagan did, you know, rack up a fair scores. Now, some of them are outrageous scores that day, and some of the balls in were, you'd know from playing cornerback, if the ball is delivered in perfectly the way it was,
well, to Flanagan,
it's indefendable. Yeah. Like, but to me, he's one of the best defenders. Obviously, maybe he has been shipped a few scores the last 2 days, but did he even get a chance to ship a few scores against Wexford? He was gone so quick. Like,
yeah, there was doubt there. There had to be doubt before the game that, you know, it was obviously playing in Lohan's mind that, did I make the right call here? Is this man motor? And then the first 5 or 6 minutes made up his mind, and he made the call. But
you don't know. He could have had a knock. Yeah. I know he jogged off the pitch after being taken off, but he could have been carrying a knock, or he could have been sick. We just don't know, like, you know.
Yeah.
So
So you're on the same side with the Limerick Galway game. I find it interesting with the commentary around Galway, particularly probably Conor Cooney and Joseph Cooney aside. I would say, I feel like, you know, Cathal Mannion, Tom Monaghan, Concannon, like, they come in for an awful lot of talk. I've always liked Jason Flynn, but I haven't seen him really consistently delivering it. But there's a lot of talk about the capability of the Galway lads, but I they're still very much, like, a lot of the scores they got the last day. Cooney scored an outrageous one. Whelan, I mean, the 1, 2 or 3 that he scored, they were all in the margins. So they scored a lot, missed a lot on the margins. Like, I haven't seen, I'm looking at the Galway games thinking, Jesus, like, where's the resty? Like, just give us, there's more there. And I don't know, is it Shefflin as manager, and or the loss of Joe Canning and the effect of that, or playing in the shadow of Joe Canning for so long, or whatever it is, but they're just, all the ingredients are there, but I'm just I feel there's more, and we're not getting it.
Yeah, no, and I just don't know where it's going to come from on Sunday against Limerick. Like, obviously Limerick are an outstanding team, and they're in great form, and, you know, they're going to be mad to get back for the possibility of 3 in a row. So I can't see, from, you know, looking at the quarter final, like, I think Cork left that behind them, the chances they missed. And, you know,
and Cork were horrendous on the day. Yeah. I mean, the first half they were non-existent.
You know, I think, like, they kind of let Galway off the hook a bit, so I just can't see where it's going to come from on Sunday. You know, the league game blown in Limerick at the start of the year, that Galway won, Limerick were down a good number of players. Now they stood up to him physically, but I don't know, is that going to be enough again this Sunday? Like, I think it'll be, you know, meat and drink to Limerick, that physical game, you know. And I just can't see where the Galway are going to win, how are they going to win this game. You know, Conor Whelan is going to have to be outstanding again. You know, he's going to need a bit of help, you know, along with that from, if it's Concannon or, you know, Conor Cooney. You know, we just don't know. Like, will Joe Cooney have to go back centre back? Is Gerard McInerney going to be fit? He's going to be a massive loss.
Yeah.
If he's not going to be right after the last day. So I just can't see Galway. I think Limerick are going to win this 6-7, 8 points, I think myself.
Yeah.
I don't have any confidence in Galway, to be honest with you. And you hit the nail on the head starting off there in the conversation, that, you know, it's just the consistency. That's the one thing. You don't know if it's going to come with Galway. Like, Limerick are consistent. In fairness to Kilkenny, they're winning provincial championships. They're getting thereabouts end of every year. Galway are not consistent enough for me, and you just don't know if it's going to come again this Sunday. Like,
yeah, I always find it's a good sign when it's in the body. Like, when I'm not analysing and trying to like articulate what's going on. It's just like, you just feel it. Like, it's like there's something else there, and I don't know how. Like, what do you see? What can you see that's observable of what Shefflin has brought to Galway? And is there a chance that he can unlock something more that they're going to need?
Just on the game itself, I think expectation is gone now from Galway. You know, I think there was serious pressure on him in the quarter final. They had lost the Leinster final. You know, it was, if you lose a quarter final in Galway, the losers of Galway and Cork, it was going to be a failure of a year. There's no way of, there's no way of buttoning it up any better. It was going to be a failure of a year. I think Galway got through that. Now they're into a quarter final or into a semi final. They're one of four teams. They've got the least pressure, I think, of the four. Kilkenny are going for three losses in a row in a semi final. You know, losing semi final is not a step forward for Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Clare, there's talks of this, you know, Limerick Clare thing. But at the end of the day, if Clare, after losing a Munster final and are betting a semi final, you know, it doesn't top off a great year.
Yeah.
But I think Galway, expectation is gone. And that's why I think we're going to get a Galway performance. Is it good enough to beat Limerick? I probably think not. But I think the expectation is gone. And because of that, I think Galway will turn up.
And a bit freer, like they'll just be free to go, like
free to go in a semi-final, chance of getting to an All-Ireland. It's kind of a, you know, there's no real pressure on him, and you could see the pressure in Thurles the last day. They hurled like a team that was under pressure. Now they're coming in, the majority of their supporters, everyone out there is going to be saying all Limerick, 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 and rightly so. They deserve to be saying that. Galway have done very little to say that they deserve to go win the game. But I just have a sneaky feeling that they will turn up, and that both games, Saturday and Sunday, will be a lot closer than we think.
Is there any danger that Limerick won't? Taking their eye off the ball. See Galway as the... I mean, subconsciously, these things are always playing, and you know, you can tell a player 100 hours a day, like, you have to be focused on this, you have to focus on this. But Galway do seem like the weaker link at the moment. Like,
well, it does. Well, what'll happen is, you see, there's no second chance now. There's no back door. And in the round robin, if it went wrong for Limerick, they would have a chance. I think all the teams, if I go back to Kilkenny back in the day, if we were going out and we were expected to win a game, often a game ended up in maybe being a draw, you know, or we'd be just about to lose it. You get the replay and people say, God, Cody got it right for the replay.
Yeah.
But if a lot of it was that you copped on to what happened. Galway came, or some team came, and they brought something to us that we hadn't really seen. And we focused on our own ability, and then what the opposing team brought us just true as that day. But you have a week then to get it right and to sort it out. So you go back to Clare in the Munster final. You know, I think if they played him the week after, would they have left Tony Kelly to freedom at the park again? Not a hope. Galway might just turn up with something, that little bit more physicality. You know, Limerick get caught in their own little positions. Like, if you're a Limerick cornerback, you're going to have to mark a Galway man. You know, they will set up fairly traditional. You know, Shefflin's not into a big sweep or doing nothing massively different. Pressure is off, and I think you will see a performance. Definitely.
Is that the, go on?
No, I just feel with that. Limerick are going to have Keane Lynch probably back. Peter Casey, I see John Kiley came out and said that they're
available for selection.
They're looking good,
I think Keane Lynch is maybe a little bit slow, but
whether he starts him or not is another thing. But like, even if he doesn't, there's another three options that they can throw in. If the thing is going a bit away from, or to re-energise it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Keane Lynch coming off the bench with 20 minutes to go, the lift it'll give the team, the supporters? You know, I just think it's, I can't, all signs are telling me that Limerick are going to, not going to be stopped.
Everyone's starting at the point of Limerick are going to win it. And we're kind of trying to find reasons that Galway are going to be close.
I'm not sure Limerick are hurling as well as they have hurled in previous years.
They took a lot from the Munster Championship, though, didn't they? They learned a lot against Clare. Like, I wonder, like, Clare were going to suffer that, as Lohan talked about. But it seemed like Limerick came out. Kiley was smiling after it. He was like, we learned a lot there. We were delighted to have gotten the test, and we learned a lot. It was like an advancement instead of something to pull them back.
I think the Chase and Pack are probably not getting there, and that's a bigger concern. You know, like, the Limerick are coasting.
Well, Clare have now.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, I think Tony Kelly was even injured, was a part of last year, and they didn't have every player available that they have. So they might be showing their true potential now, Clare.
But
Limerick might not be shooting the lights out like they were. And I think if they end up beating Clare in a Munster final, which they've done, if they end up beating Galway in an All-Ireland semi, and let's say Kilkenny were to cause a surprise and overturn Clare in a semi-final.
Yeah.
You now have a Clare, Galway and Kilkenny to go win in All-Ireland. And I think, I don't mean they have to do that to be justified as a great team, but I think we can sit back and say three in a row, one, we've beaten those three teams. Like, if we go back to the Kilkenny team and 6-9 for All-Irelands, we'll say, inclusive, when we went in 2010 and ye beat us, even though we'd four All-Irelands won and we went to the last game in the fifth year, we'll say, right up to, 70 minutes away from five in a row, I think we needed to win in 2011 to justify that team.
Mm.
Because if that was the case, then in 2009,
why did you need to justify it? Like, why aren't four All-Irelands in 4 years? Like, why is that not enough? Like, what needs to be justified? Like,
quite simply, when Parik is beside me here, we beat Tip in 2009, but luckily enough to beat Tip, it was a very close game, very little in it. We scored a late goal. Tip.
That's when the chase and pack caught you, wasn't it? That, well, Tipperary pulled up to you in the league quarter semi or the league final that year was the first time you were
matched. Tip got caught in 2007 and 2008, and if they didn't get caught, how much of a difference would we have? Do you know, like, if you go back to the Limerick team there now, they're after beating a Cork in an All-Ireland, which is an absolute cakewalk. Watford, the year previous, it was another pretty much of a cakewalk.
Yeah.
Like, I can picture Gerard Hegarty scoring a point of one of those All-Irelands near the end of the game, and he's actually smiling putting the ball over the bar. You can see a smile on his face. Like, He should be nearly fainting when he's doing it with pressure. You know what I mean? That's what an All-Ireland is. And, you know, I think we'd have felt, if we'd have lost the 11 All-Ireland, we'd have played Tip and three All-Irelands and lost two of them. And I think that would have taken the gloss off what we'd have done. And, you know, by all mean regards, I'd say blowing Limerick at the moment, I think they want Kilkenny in a final. They'd love to meet Kilkenny because it's the one thing that's probably there to say. And, you know, it's very, from my point of view, I don't even know, do I want to win the semi-final, in the sense that, you know, I'm not sure, can we compete?
Yeah.
We can compete in every way, but I just don't think we might be have the ability to go win in All-Ireland or win two games in a row. I think we can definitely beat Clare, but Limerick will love, I think, to beat Galway and to meet Kilkenny and beat Kilkenny, and didn't have a perfect three in a row.
I think, like, I know I was saying there, I think I can't see that under a Limerick victory, but I think out of the two teams, Galway have a better chance of beating Limerick than Cork would have, if Cork would have won.
Yeah.
If that makes sense to you. But
it sure makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, they're the best probably. Well, with the exception of Clare, I suppose, like, they definitely have a better chance.
But out of the two, that would want to come true from that game to play Limerick.
I think Kilkenny included, I think Galway have a better chance.
Galway have, you know, maybe some of the materials or artillery maybe to try and upset Limerick, but it's going to take one hell of an effort, and I think Limerick have a real off day for me for that to happen.
Would you have suspected that about Kilkenny, like, the domination of that time, and then, like, it mattered to them, the Tipperary, that they beat you 2 out of 3 as opposed to being bet 2 out of 3? Would you have thought that at the time, between that rivalry was so intense there, as opposed to just Kilkenny kind of in this just period of great domination?
Yeah, I suppose it probably did kind of work Kilkenny a bit. The Tipperary were kind of, because there wasn't many other teams really competing against Kilkenny, was there, back? You know, they won a lot of their games fairly handily. I know, we'll say 04, 5 and 6, Cork were decent, but then there was a bit of a gap, wasn't there? Like, there was no real, you know, team competing with Kilkenny that much. And then I think Tip came along and kind of ruffled the feathers a bit for a year or two, like, you know. So I think that kind of, and then obviously the old age-old rivalry, a typical Kilkenny kind of, it probably helped Kilkenny lads, I'd say, in a way, to, you know, come back every year and say, probably eyeing up the Tipperary game, I suppose. We'll say they won 6, 7, 8 fairly handily, and then I suppose it kind of helped Kilkenny, you know, in hindsight, that they knew coming in that Tipperary were coming and they didn't want to relinquish, you know, not Ireland crown to their rivals, like, you know.
Look at it a different way. Let's just say a miracle happened and Kilkenny won this All-Ireland and beat Limerick in it.
Yeah.
You know, that would probably stain the Limerick's performance, in the sense that, you know, they've won the two and Kilkenny beat them, and
Kilkenny beat them 19 and then to beat them again.
Yeah. So, you know, that is a serious driving force for Limerick. So that's a worrying thing for Kilkenny if we happen to pull off a victory against Clare. That, you know, the last thing you want is a Limerick team going in with a kind of an edge to try and beat you, that they feel that they need to beat you to, you know, they're so dominant already. Like, and that's, bring that back to the semi-final against Galway this weekend. They don't really have that edge to beat Galway. Do you know, Galway have been quite poor. They've lost a Leinster final. They struggled there for massive periods. If Cork had a hit fire in that first 20 minutes, they could have been 6-7 points down. Instead, they were 3 points up. And, you know, it could have been annihilation. So now they're sitting there in the final, and it's not that they'll overlook it. You know, people say, do you take their eye off the ball? But you just don't have, they don't have that desire, I'd say, that drive to go out and do it, because there's no need for it. But
wouldn't it, if you had one wish, wouldn't it be unreal to Cody Shefflin final again, Galway and Kilkenny, after everything that went on for this year and the game so far? Like, wouldn't the hurling guys just looking down and say, we'll just make it a Kilkenny-Galway final, and how intriguing that would be then.
Yeah, might be a third and fourth place playoff, I'd say, at this stage. We'll see. I mean, it's surprising. I suppose it's surprising to me when I think about it, maybe, or wherever I can get closest to it, is maybe a year where we beat Kilkenny in the quarterfinal or semi-final of a Leinster Championship. That's a success, maybe, as a year for Wexford, but it's surprising that, you know, you're on this march towards All-Ireland Finals, and there's so much commentary about hurling following that win at all costs mentality. But actually, you get the sense that All-Irelands weren't necessarily the only story in town. Like, it was also important to beat Tipperary, like, or it was also important to beat Kilkenny, or like that battle, the battle of the neighbours, was kind of that was a big aside in winning All-Irelands.
Yeah, because it's not about the medal. And, you know, if let's say there was four All-Irelands won there, and in 09 there was late goals, so, you know, I'm right on the border of Kilkenny and Tip, and you'd always have a bit of crack with the guys in Tipperary, and it'd always been, you know, over the years, and still through work and different times you'd come across them. But I suppose back then I think there was a penalty, Richie Power, and they were saying it was a soft penalty, and, you know, Tip felt they could have won that 09 final quite easily. And then they come along and they did win 10. So if they won 11 as well, that definitely took the gloss off Kilkenny. Let them have won what they've won before that. So Kilkenny probably came with fire in 11 as well. It's amazing to think it, but after winning four All-Irelands, nearly winning the five in a row, but if we'd have lost 11, I think it would have glossed it off. And it's the same for Limerick. You know, they're at this high peak there now at the moment. But if they don't win this All-Ireland, you know, that will be something taken from you. You can never take a medal back, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it's very easy then. You know, Galway were a team that put it up to them as well. Like, so I said, go back to my earlier point. Beat Clare in a Munster final. Beat Galway in a semi-final. Beat Kilkenny in a final. That's the perfect thing to do for Limerick. That's the perfect three in a row. Sit down, relax.
Retire into the sunset. Yeah. Off you go on a cruise.
Yeah.
You win 10 and 11. What are you looking forward to then? Like, do you think that the loss in 11, was there a chance? And is that part of what Kilkenny are trying to do as well? Like, is to make sure that you don't go on looking for a four in a row, or like that's the start of your drive. Like, is that, are you being kept down as much as possible as well? Whereas if you'd have won 10, then 11 on the back of it, and all of a sudden you're going for a three in a row, and there's a possibility with the calibre of players that you have of starting your own dynasty. Like, is that the fine lines of that? Like,
yeah, like, I suppose you can't really say we came close in 11 because we didn't perform at all in the final, I don't think. And but see, that back home in Tip, then there's a lot made of Tip winning back to back. They haven't been able to do it since the 60s, like, I think, when they last done back-to-back All-Ireland. So there was a bit made of that now. Not us as players or at the time or as a panel, or it was never mentioned, but...
But you'd know that it's being mentioned. There was the story of, like, yeah, that you'd celebrate or that you'd fall out. I don't know, like, it just seemed you couldn't knock... Something was getting in the way of knocking two, three together, like...
Yeah, and I don't know what it was, to be honest with you. I said it wasn't really brought into the group with us. Like, it wasn't really mentioned... Again, if you go do a media night or something before a game, it was always brought up, or, you know, how much is it, how important is it for back-to-back, or have you spoke about it? Like, we never talked about it. I don't know, Gene Kilkenny, if you were going for three in a row, it was spoken of, or, you know, but I don't think players think like that, or,
yeah,
you know, you're already thinking about what's coming ahead of you. And, like, in 2011, we weren't thinking, oh, we have to back-to-back. You know, it was just kind of like, we're trying to do what we can this year. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I never forget meeting Gerlach Nan about 2015 at a function. I remember he said to me, he says, for you to be, considered a great team, you have to do back to back. Like, and I was like, when it came to my head, like, you know, that, but other people seem to think that's what you have to do. Like, and I suppose making it relevant now at the moment, you know, everyone, you know, and rightly so, Kilkenny or that team that G played in that one 4 in a row probably regarded as the greatest team of all time. And I'd say Limerick are probably eyeing that mantle at the moment. They're probably saying, you know, for us to be considered a great now, we'll have to do the 3 in a row, you know, to be considered great along with that Kilkenny team. So, you know, I think that's, at the moment, that's probably there what we're silently aiming for.
Yeah.
And I think people, all of us, looking in from the outside, are probably saying to ourselves as well that, you know, for them to be considered great, they'll have to do 3 in a row. And I think they'll relish the opportunity coming now in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, look at the two semi-finals are what we're here for. But it is interesting, I suppose, as a Wexford man and as a Wexford hurler, like thinking about the young fella who would just be thinking about trying to perform and maybe trying to beat Kilkenny or win a Leinster Championship, or, you know, you didn't care who you were playing against. You'd taken a learning against anybody, like, you know, to hear, I suppose, the insights of what the inner workings of Tipperary and Kilkenny and what that, I suppose, the importance of legacy. And that's definitely something that Limerick are striving to protect as well. So that's all we've time for here with the two lads. We're looking forward to the two semi-finals. We'll be back here next Monday for that. But for now, we're going to be joined, coming in from Antrim, with Neil McManus. How are we getting on, Neil?
Hey, Dermot, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Looking forward to the games at the weekend. Down up here in Dublin in studio. Good to be here. Get out of West Kerry for the day. It's nice to be on the computer and not have two children hanging out of me shoulders. How's life up in Cushendall these days?
Yeah, it was good. Just as you well know, having visited, the place kind of comes alive at summertime. So
came alive that night anyway. My God.
I'd say everyone comes alive whenever you visit, Gizzy.
The burning question that I had when I was coming up thinking about chatting to you was how much you miss Shane McNaughton.
I miss him a lot, obviously, but he's missed in the village too. He's great crack. Actually, was en route over to a wake in Ballycastle 2 evenings ago when he rang, and me and one of my other pals, Seamus McCambridge, Mahubri, we had an absolute riot for 20 minutes just with Shane letting us know how he was getting on in New York for the drive over to Ballycastle. So I miss him, but he's playing his own furrow there and putting a lot of work into the acting, and so hopefully it'll be something that becomes very fruitful for him.
Yeah, I mean, it can be very hard to tell from the outside, and with acting, maybe with all the creative arts in some respects, but it's how is it held in Cushendall, like, to see, like, is it a pride or is it a lament that he's not still here and still involved, or how do they view Shane's transition to New York life and acting?
Shane being the character that he is, I don't think anybody would be, you know, massively surprised that he would take on a challenge like that. I think everybody just is hopeful that it'll be successful for him, really. You know, that's it, because he's so well liked in Antrim, and obviously especially in the Glens of Antrim, and he's such a good character that I think everybody would kind of have a feeling that it will work out for him. It will come good for him, because he's one of those characters that he brings life to whatever he does, and he's great fun to be around. And you know, I think that if he gets the right opportunity, I'm certain he'll take it. He'll do well.
Yeah. Asher, look, it's a pleasure to even talk about the fella. Sure, we had a great night. The three of us and plenty more besides. Looking back in at Antrim's year, you've obviously made huge strides forward. I'm assuming that's what you'd call them anyway. Neil, what is it like? I mean, looking forward even to the senior finals at the weekend, having had the year that you've had and going in the direction now that Antrim Hurling is going in, can you kind of sit back on the sofa now and enjoy the games and not be kind of concerned and worried about where you're going, that there's just more hope and more positivity towards it?
I think two things that were really important for Antrim this year were getting back into the Leinster round robin, because the year that we did qualify for it, obviously COVID impacted it, so we didn't get the round robin games. We just got the one knockout Leinster Championship game, which was, that was a big disappointment. But the, you know, next year Antrim will play in the Leinster round robin, have those five really high quality games. So it was great to get back into the Leinster round robin, and also it was really important that Antrim maintain their Division One status in the league as well, because, you know, that's to become comfortable playing at that top level, you've got to be doing it day in, day out. And that group of players that Antrim have currently are very, very capable of living in that environment. So those two points were something that we did concentrate on quite a bit, and we, you know, it was very important to them that we're playing, you know, Liam McCarthy hurling next year along with the Division One league games. But at the same time, you know, I'll be watching the games thinking, like, we missed out. We missed an opportunity. Like, we had Cork and Corrigan, and it's not very often we have that sort of opportunity. And, you know, if we could have been a little bit better on the day, I think there was an opportunity to get something out of that game.
So other people are thinking that Antrim did well to come so close to Cork, whereas you're thinking, you're a little bit like William Wallace in Braveheart. You're like, we'll invade England. You're going the other way. Like, you're like, no, we're disappointed not to be in an All-Ireland final. Don't mind not pulling it off against Cork, which, yeah, maybe says a lot about where your attitude is at the moment.
Yeah, I think I'd be speaking for a lot of the panel whenever I say that we didn't do ourselves justice that day against Cork. You know, we weren't really good. Effort and intensity were good. That's one thing that has developed really well. Like, Antrim put a shift in every time you go out now, and we just didn't execute very well. You know, I missed a couple of really handy opportunities myself. We missed a few frees. We gave away two goals in defence, really, and we gave them away, you know, and it was quite unlike us, to be honest. So there was without doubt an opportunity to win that game, and, you know, you got to take those opportunities when they come, and we didn't, and we allowed Cork to become comfortable then in the second half, and, you know, we were only 1 point up at half time, and that really needed to be 6, 7, 8 points to have Cork under pressure and to make them do things they don't usually do.
Yeah, you'd hurled so well, but to only be one up, it wasn't maybe reflective, and that's where it falls down then, because they get the sniff, like, you know, they have a belief that, oh, well, look, at this is just going to follow the age-old pattern of, you know, the challengers give it everything that they have, and then, you know, inevitably run out of steam, which for you is kind of a frustrating way for it to have gone, because you felt you had a greater opportunity. What about, I read a quote, and I was wondering where you lie on it. I think it was from Shane McGrath, and he was talking about Antrim now having the hurling elite's respect, and I was wondering, I suppose, how much you care about that. How much of a driving force is it? Is there a desire to be part of a top table, or are you just very focused at the moment on driving yourselves on, irrespective of what anybody else thinks about that?
I personally don't care what anybody really outside of Antrim thinks about us. You know, it's nice whenever people say nice things about, you know, the county that you're from, but, like, the only thing you can concentrate on is yourself and your team, and, you know, we can just focus on trying to improve constantly. And there's a good attitude about the panel. They want to be competing at the top table. They want to be, you know, playing those big games all the time. There's a real thirst there for that from that group, and they're pretty young. In fairness, it's an ambitious group. And it's nice when you know, somebody is decorated as Shane McGrath, you know, pays Antrim hurling a compliment, but you can't get caught up, because, you know, if you listen to all the media, I'm sure there's similar commentary that Antrim are still maybe way off the pace and things like that. So you can't really be taking too much from, you know, the journalism side of things.
What has Darren Gleeson brought to Antrim? And I suppose I would preface that a little bit with, like, the journey that you're on with Darren at the moment, the trajectory that you're on with Darren at the moment, are you keen to like bring in more, or do you trust in the evolution as it is now?
Darren's put a brilliant kind of background team in place. Obviously, he's very driven and he's a very committed guy himself, but he's brought in a lot of expertise. You know, our strength and conditioning coach is phenomenal, the guy Brendan Murphy. You know, Johnny Campbell, who does our coaching's top class. You know, and we're very, very lucky to have that. And I think the way we are prepared for games now, the way we're prepared for training sessions, has changed hugely under Darren's management. And you know, it's great to be part of that. You know, if players want to, you know, they want to be getting to the highest level they possibly can, and Darren's changed the level that Antrim operate at. There's no two ways about that.
How are you enjoying your hurling at the moment? What age are you now, Neil?
34.
34. How's it? How are you enjoying it?
I love it. I wouldn't be doing it otherwise. And I think that's the bit you have to realise, I think, yourself, is that nobody should be doing this, because the commitment level is big. So you got to be loving it to want to do it.
Do you ever try and get that across to the younger fellas? Like, is it something that comes in with age? Like, I often felt, looking back in maybe when I'd finished, and I think you're in, you know, in a luckier stage where you have a lot of experience gained, and I think a lot of wisdom gained as well. I'd say with a wry smile, but you certainly have, and you're trying to communicate to fellas. Like, I often felt with fellas on the Wexford panel, I was like, have you answered the question of why you're doing this? Like, because there's a lot of talk about sacrifice, and training seems to be a bit of a pain in the hole for you, and you don't seem to be too happy. It's like, you're choosing to do this. Is it because you want to do it? Is it because you love it? Or is it because, you know, you're the son of a great player, or because your community expects you to play? Or like, have you answered that burning question for yourself?
So I know exactly why I play, and why I love to be part of the whole rich hurling tapestry that's part of the Glens of Antrim, where I'm from, and Cushendall and Antrim as a whole. And we do, I think, you know, there's definitely there's a mentality in Antrim where we're very, very proud to be representing Antrim, because there's been a whole lot of hard times for Antrim for generations, and there's been different struggles and a little bit forgotten about at times from the powers that be as well. And like, yeah. I know that hurling means so much to my family, it means so much to the community that I'm from, that there's no greater feeling than representing those people. And I've been so fortunate and so lucky to be able to do it for as long as I have, that I probably couldn't enjoy it anymore. Actually, I absolutely love it, and you know, I don't look forward to when I'm not able to do it. I think that'll leave a big void in my life, but more so,
yeah,
more so
probably
from the
will.
Point of view of not getting to, you know, represent your village and your county and the people that have done so much for me through the years. And I have no problem speaking about that. I think you get a bit more probably honest whenever you're older, and you know, you don't care if you don't look cool in the changing room about what you speak about and things like that. So I think the boys in our changing room, you know, at our club and with Antrim, both know that I'm very passionate about it, about what I do and why I do it, and they are probably, I would say, they're receptive enough of that, in fairness, even though they're all, you know, quite a bit younger in some cases.
Yeah, I would say so as well. I guess they're definitely has always felt to me in our dealings an integrity and a joy in how you speak about the game. And I certainly felt when I was up there that maybe I had envisaged something of a defiance, or like playing hurling was within the confines of a political environment as a kind of a statement. But actually, when I went up into it, I don't think I've been to very many places where there was such a joyful celebration of the game from the community. And it was a real pleasure to be up there. I was in esteemed company. the games the weekend, how do you see them going?
I think Limerick will be too strong for Galway. Just I think they are still just a little bit better than everybody else. I don't think any team's ever as far beyond everyone as we think, and I don't think the chasing pack are ever as far behind as what we make out to when a team is winning, because obviously Limerick have just got over the line in the Munster final against Clare, but they are, I think they're operating at a different level than Galway, to be honest. I don't think Galway are parts. I think Galway missed you, and that's, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think they're a little bit, directionally a little bit lost without him.
Yeah, but even if you look back at the game last year, Joe nearly pulled him back into the Waterford game by himself. You know, he made the goal. He the last puck out that rained down, it was hit on top of Joe Cannon. He caught it and he moved in with it and, you know, took a score. Like, he was still the go-to man last season. So it's no slight on Galway that they haven't been able to, you know, fully replace Joe Cannon. Nobody could have done it. No county could have done it. I think they're, you know, we'll take somebody, and I know Conor Cooney, he is, you know, becoming more prominent with each game, and he may take on that mantle. But I think it's going to be a year and maybe another season before somebody grows into that level of leadership and that level of responsibility taker on that team.
Yeah.
Limerick can hurt you from everywhere, you know.
For sure.
You almost need to man mark Dermot Burns at wing back. Like, it's crazy the level that it's.
If you can keep the 2 points, you're doing well. Like,
yeah, exactly. And so I think Limerick will beat Galway. I'm going to go down to the Clare and Kilkenny game. And it's funny, you know, standing outside the corner shop, the shop of Milsheen and Cushendall, and we were talking to a couple of older lads about the All Ireland and who would win it. And nobody was talking about Kilkenny. It was almost hilarious that, you know, there's 4 teams left in Ireland and nobody's talking about Kilkenny, who have more All Ireland's won than anybody. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kilkenny are the team that could, you know, beat Limerick. I know they did it in the semi final 3 years ago, was that now? But I wouldn't be surprised if Kilkenny were able to get to the final and beat Limerick. You know, it's, even though I know they're not the team that they were, but they're still so dogged. They're so passionate. They go out, they give it everything every time they play. Now, Clare have been phenomenal. Clare were so unlucky not to get over the line. I think they've had, you know, 2 draws and a defeat in extra time with their last 3 games to Limerick. And Limerick are who you judge yourself against now. So Clare definitely have taken that position of number 2 this season. But beware of Kilkenny, is what I would say to anybody from Clare. Like, you can't...
Write him off at your peril, man. That's always the way, isn't it? Listen, Neil, that's all we have time for, man. I could stay with that image for an awful lot longer of the Fewey at the corner shop in Cushendall chatting about who's going to win the All-Ireland. If ever there's a pristine view of Cushendall for me, that's definitely it. Listen, thanks very much for joining us. We'll chat to you again. That's all we have time for the moment, but we'll be back next week to look back on what's going to be a brilliant weekend of hurling, and we'll know who's down to the last 2 and who's going to be that step closer to lifting the Lee McCarthy. Garamag Gaiva Gaslan.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Dermot Ling on Sports Joe.
Donal O'Donovan is the left corner back. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well, and that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now.